Good morning, Burners. How's it going? My name is Mary Kate, and I'm with the City of Ukiah, and I want to welcome you all to the Ukiah Valley Conference Center. So, viva la revolucion, and let me introduce today's organizer, Tamar Kay.
Thank you so much for all coming and all feeling the burn. I want to, of course, thank Tulsi Gabbard for coming such a long way to... to help enlighten us and to help excite us and to help, you know, give us reasons to share with our friends why we should give a darn. I'm mostly up here to thank We Flowers, also Rainforest Fantasy. If you get a chance, if you come up and smell the roses, those are probably roses I grew at my garden, but my partner Crispin Kane and I have Greenway Distillers and Americraft Whiskey Distillery, and I'm doing this in my spare time. I'd like to give a shout out to all the local merchants that have been extremely supportive, the City of Ukiah that has accommodated us. We started talking to them Thursday, because we heard Tulsi was coming last Wednesday. So thanks for coming here on such short notice. And I want to give a specific shout out to Slam Dunk, who is our unofficial headquarters. If you have cheap or moderately priced office space, we are looking. Thank you.
I'm Phil Baldwin, and we will get to our special guest very quickly, but we do have a few things to deal with first. One is I took a straw poll in my seventh grade class yesterday without any proselytizing, of course, and the results were 3 votes for Donald Trump, 4 votes for Hillary Clinton, 1 vote for Jill Stein, 34 votes for Bernie Sanders. And fathom this, we contacted Tulsi's office first in Hawaii and then I think in Washington, D.C., and it was a long shot, and found out that her primary engagement on this Northern California trip is Ukiah, Mendocino, California. Now, Tulsi told me to do this later, but I have to do it right now. We've got 2 weeks to make sure our friends are registered properly. We've got this bogus, weird system and we all have friends who are not registered Democrat. We all do. You need to contact them and tell them a couple of things in the next 2 weeks. Tell them that they have to permanently or temporarily register Democrat. That is the easiest way to vote for Bernie. In the next 2 weeks, register Democrat. If you don't like the party after June 7th, you can re-register to your old party, okay? That's really important. Those who refuse and want to remain independent, they have to be no party preference, which we used to call declined estate. And they have to go through a completely different level. They have to then request, if they're going to do a mail-in ballot, they have to request a Democratic ballot in advance. I think the deadline for that is May 31. So please tell your friends, you all have friends who aren't properly registered, get them registered in the next... Well, May 23rd to register. May 31, if you're a declined estate, no party preference, that's the last day to ask for a Democratic ballot. Okay. Volunteers, we will talk later after Tulsi's through, talk about the need for volunteers. The key here would be to an overwhelming victory in the 2nd Congressional District. We need to turn our congressman around on this issue. He's a superdelegate. And now we have conceivably, maybe, Bernie's eldest supporter. And she's going to say a few words to you. And so her son is with her, Barry Vogel, And this is Lillian Vogel.
Phil's right. My mother is the strongest Bernie supporter I've ever met. And this is also my brother, Norm. My mother has a couple of words to say that are very important.
Hello, everybody. I am a lifelong feminist. And I have voted in every election since 1930. Probably long before most of you or all of you were born, when I was 21. Now, if you want to figure out how old I am now, I'll tell you. I am 106. I will be 107. And that makes me the oldest person in Ukiah. I am proud to be here with you and Councilwoman Tulsi, and to support Bernie Sanders. I'm for him, for president. Let's all get to work and get our friends and registered voters to vote for Bernie on June the 7th. So let's get out there and get our neighbors and our friends to vote for him. Well, you want me to... I want to thank all of you for coming. This is a really worthwhile project in the United States today.
We all have friends. They call themselves pragmatists or realists. And my friends, who claim to be these pragmatists, tell me that there's no difference, significant difference, between Bernie and his primary opponent. We know that's hogwash. We know there's a reason to select Bernie June 7th. The differences between the two are critical, and they're very clear. These same realists say, Phil, it's all over. Do the math. Well, it's not. That also is hogwash. She cannot arrive in Philadelphia with sufficient pledged delegates to get a majority at the convention. She cannot. Our opponent is therefore counting on, we all know, the superdelegates. Bernie's gonna need some help turning them around. A victory in California and Oregon and Kentucky and West Virginia will be very helpful. But we're liable also to need other issues related to the quality of experience and the trust issue. And here's where I'm going to start to whisper. There are some issues dogging our primary opponent. We all know that. It's possible that one of these five issues will explode before the Philadelphia convention. Five issues, five words. Emails, foundation, transcripts, Libya, Syria. I'm a populist social democrat, and I was with Bernie when he announced about a year ago. But I have to make an admission. Compared with a lot of you here and other Ukiahans for Bernie, I was sort of moderate. I was a little bit tepid at first because I wasn't hearing any discussion from Bernie about the issue of war and peace. And it was about 2.5 months ago, I believe, when Congresswoman from Hawaii resigned from the vice chairship of the Democratic National Committee to endorse Bernie Sanders. and at that point, in the debates and in the rally speeches, we began to hear our person, our man, begin to talk about the significant differences on the issue of war and peace. And I think Tulsi Gabbard had a lot to do with that. Tulsi, who is she? Most of you already know, but she's served two tours in the Iraq War. She's a two-term member of Congress. She serves on the House Armed Services Committee and the Foreign Affairs Committee. And she's a major in the Hawaii National Guard and a key foreign policy advisor to the next president, Bernie Sanders. Now, here's something significant to me. It's a wee bit sad. Out of 535 members of Congress, Tulsi Gabbard is the, and I mean the, leader against wars of choice, regime change war, endless war. She is the significant leader in Congress on this issue. And on this issue, she's been so effectively outspoken and articulate, the mainstream media, her colleagues, and the nation are paying attention. She's a rising star. As I already said, she resigned as vice chair of the Democratic National Committee. She's here in Ukiah, California, to promote Bernie Sanders. To me, she's a hero, not for her service in the Iraq War, but for her brave stand against the nation's ongoing, bipartisan, devastating regime change wars. She's here for Bernie. Listen now, listen carefully to Tulsi Gabbard.
Thank you. Aloha. One more, aloha. Thank you so much for your warm, aloha-filled welcome for me here today. What Phil just talked about, and what I was asked earlier this morning, why is Tulsi Gabbard a congresswoman from Hawaii in Ukiah, California? It's because of what's at stake in this election. It's because of the power and the responsibility that lies in each and every one of your hands. There's a lot at stake here, and no single person should be discounted. No single voice should be diminished. Not a single one of you should feel as though this election is over and this democracy is not representing you and your family and your community and the issues that you care about. So that's why I'm here, to stand in solidarity with each of you, to stand shoulder to shoulder with you as we continue to fight for these issues that we care so much about, that we continue to recognize what's at stake in this election and that it is far from over. I want to thank, first of all, Phil for reaching out to me. Where did Phil go? There he is. You know, I got to be honest with you. I got this email through my website from Phil Baldwin from Ukiah, California, saying, please come out. We'd love to see you. We'd love to rally some support for Bernie Sanders. And I had to look on a map. Where? Ukiah, California. And I had this whole discussion with my family. They're like, Ukiah, that's haiku spelled backwards. Is that intentional or not? I still don't know. So I went online, I did a little research, learned a little bit about Ukiah and Mendocino and the valley and this beautiful place that you call home. But it wouldn't have happened if Phil hadn't reached out and sent that email. So thank you, Phil. Tamar Kay has played a tremendous leadership role in bringing this whole thing together, so I want to give a shout out to Tamar Thanks for your hard work. And last but not least, the Ukiah and Willits Bernie campaign teams. And the coast. Thank you. The heart of this campaign is being run by people like yourselves. And I feel really privileged to have been able to meet such incredible people on Bernie's campaign all across the country. And one of the things that strikes me, campaigns can be intense and you get a lot of passionate people involved and in the same room. Sparks can fly sometimes. But every single person I've met along this entire journey have been so positive, so optimistic, so hopeful, and so committed to this endeavor and understanding that this is bigger than any one of us as individuals. So I want to just say thanks to all the volunteers who are making those phone calls, who are knocking on those doors, who are getting the word out to folks about why they should vote for Bernie and exactly how to make sure that California wins big for Bernie on June 7th. Through each of the different places that I've gone and visited in this country, speaking in support of Bernie Sanders, I always begin with aloha, as I did with you. Not only am I proud of my home and the people who I serve in Congress, the people who've hired me to work for them, but aloha is such a beautiful, powerful word that is very appropriate for all of us gathered here today and for what we're trying to do. It's more than just hello and goodbye, as it's most often used. But when you look at the traditional greeting of aloha and the real meaning, is aloha means respect. It means love. It means compassion. So when I aloha you, it means I'm coming to you with an open heart. I'm coming to you with that open heart and with that understanding that no matter where we come from, no matter our background, economic, class, educational, pedigree, race, religion, gender, any of these other things that may make us unique, we all stand together. We are all equal. We are all part of this one big, beautiful family. And it's that spirit that I find is at the heart of this campaign. And it was that spirit that I found when I spoke to Bernie Sanders about endorsing him, that I find in his drive and his passion and his care and heart that motivates him and energizes him as he is going through this tremendous campaign. It's that spirit that I find as we stand together, as we raise these issues of great importance, as we talk about this most important fight to take back our democracy from the very powerful, from the very wealthy, and the very few, and to put it back into your hands, to put it back into the hands of the people where it belongs. Now, this is something that goes to the very heart and the very fabric of who we are as a nation and who we are as people. I was with Bernie a few weeks ago in Pennsylvania as we were campaigning there, and we made a stop at Gettysburg. There was a couple hours between different rallies, and we stopped at Gettysburg. Wonderful tour guide named Sue took us through some of the battlefields, and we ended up in the place overlooking the exact location where Abraham Lincoln gave that famous address in 1863, whose words Bernie often repeats in every one of his speeches about how this nation shall have a new birth of freedom, that a government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall never perish from this earth. And that's what we continue to fight for today. That proposition is just as relevant today as it was when those words were delivered, that we stand in solidarity with each other, fighting for this ever-disappearing middle class, fighting together to lift people up out of poverty, making sure that our working families are able to earn
a living wage, making sure that we are standing together and building on this promise of this brighter future together. We met this morning with a few veterans who I know are here. Can the veterans in the room raise your hands or stand up? Let us thank you for your service. It's nice to see you again. Thank you for coming out and for making sure that we all know about your support for Senator Sanders. There is so much to be said about the cost of war and who pays the bill in that cost. And no one appreciates what that cost is. No one appreciates peace more than those who have seen and experienced war firsthand. It is a travesty when we take a moment to stop and think about the immeasurable human cost of war. I got a text message from a friend of mine 3 days ago who shared with me how a young soldier that he had mentored during his time in service had just taken his own life. Someone who survived multiple deployments in combat, made it home, but was struggling so much without the right kind of support and help that he ended up taking that final action. Sadly, the numbers of veterans who make that choice every day is too high. The average is 22 veterans committing suicide every single day. 22 people in our country, veterans who voluntarily put their lives on the line to serve. So when we think about the cost of war and we think about veterans and how we as a country are taking care of our veterans, as the veterans here in the room know, around Veterans Day and Memorial Day and these special days, you hear a lot from politicians and others saying, thank you for your service. And then what happens? You chuckle, right? Because so often that thank you for your service is followed not only by inaction, but as we're seeing in Congress today, efforts to repeal and pull back and peel away at veterans' benefits that have been promised and that our servicemen and women have earned. And oftentimes these efforts take place in the dark of night, behind closed doors, even without all members of Congress present. There was a bill not too long ago that was passed by so-called unanimous consent, meaning there may have been five people in the room, that took away and peeled back the post-9/11 GI Bill benefits for the family members of veterans. And this happened without any notice, without any warning. It was snuck in there and pushed through. You can imagine how pissed off we were about this. But this action is something, thankfully, over since that time, we have been able to fight back. We have raised the voices of veterans across the country. And this same bill now is moving out of the Senate and coming back to the House with those benefits reinstated because veterans and the American people stood up and said, we will not stand for this. Bernie Sanders was one of those people who stood up on this platform that he has now as a presidential candidate to say, we will defend veterans' benefits, we will defend the post-9/11 GI Bill, and we will make sure that we keep our promises. Over his entire congressional time of service, he's introduced and co-sponsored over 64 pieces of legislation that deal directly with serving our veterans. He has backed up his thanks and his gratitude with action. And I think that's important as we look to see what kind of president and commander-in-chief we want. In addition to that, for those who have laid down the uniform, Bernie has exercised the good judgment to recognize not to take those actions lightly in making those decisions, thinking first about the cost of war before you send someone to war, rather than after, which unfortunately doesn't happen enough. During my first deployment, I was deployed to Iraq and I served in a medical unit where every single day I saw that immeasurable and very high human cost of war firsthand. People who I knew, people who I didn't know, people who I knew who had families and friends and communities back home who carried that cost of war with them. And it was my experiences through both of my deployments that really drove home for me the paramount need for a commander-in-chief who has a military mindset and who has the sound judgment to make this most important decision about sometimes when military power may be necessary, when we have adversaries or those who are threatening the safety and security of our country and our people, and just as importantly, when not to use that power, when to choose peace over war. What's interesting to me is that as I've talked about how Bernie Sanders has this military mindset, people look at me like, really? That guy from Vermont? It's because they misunderstand what a military mindset is. They misunderstand it and mistake it to be someone who walks around with their chest puffed out, talking macho, talking tough, throwing around this kind of tough talk. But it's actually the opposite. This military mindset is having someone who objectively analyzes and examines carefully a particular course of action and looks ahead to see, okay, if we do this, this nation or this actor or this terrorist group will respond like this. How will we then react to that? What will their reaction to our action be? And take this all the way down the line before that military action is taken, rather than after. And when you look at so many of the decisions that have been made, in particular in the Middle East over the last decade, and the chaos and failures that have persisted because of that, the tremendous loss of life in the region, it's because that military mindset was not exercised, because that action was taken without thinking carefully and examining what happens the day after. What happens when people return fire? What happens when they take that action in response? And that's why I knew it was important for me to step away from that neutral position as vice chair of the DNC, to come out and fully and openly and publicly support Senator Bernie Sanders because of what's at stake and because of the difference between our two Democratic candidates when it comes to who has that good judgment, that intelligence and foresight to make those most important decisions. Bernie has made it clear time and time again, both through his record and the positions that he has advocated for throughout this campaign, that he will not waste our precious treasure, our precious resources and lives on continuing these unnecessary interventionist regime change wars and the so-called nation building that ensues after these nations fail. Instead, he will use those resources carefully to nation build right here at home. He will use those resources to rebuild our infrastructure, to invest in education, to preserve social security. In Hawaii, as we say, to take care of our kupuna, our elders, those who have come before us, to invest in our economy, fighting to keep jobs here on American soil and standing up, speaking out against and stopping these destructive trade deals that end up exporting our jobs, benefiting these multinational billion-dollar corporations literally on the backs of our working families and working people. So that's where the clear choice lies before us, and the clear choice that we have to communicate to our friends and neighbors in the coming days and weeks prior to your voting here. Secretary Clinton has shown through her record and through the positions that she's taken, beginning with her vote for the Iraq War, with her leadership within the administration and heading up and being the chief architect behind the military overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya, an action that has resulted in a complete failed nation, tremendous chaos, loss of life, and now our enemy, ISIS, having a stronghold in that country that didn't exist before. and her promise to continue and escalate this illegal, counterproductive war to overthrow yet another government in Syria by implementing a no-fly zone, something that would bury us in perpetual and endless war, something that our President Obama, Vice President Biden, military leaders, and by the way, Senator Bernie Sanders, all oppose because they recognize the disastrous consequences of this action. Bernie has promised to end these unnecessary, costly wars, keep our nation safe by defeating those like ISIS and Al-Qaeda who threaten us, and using those taxpayer dollars to rebuild our communities here at home. Because the fact is, you can't afford to do both. We have seen the direct result and impact of years and years and trillions of dollars being spent on these unnecessary wars overseas. We see the results of that in our failing infrastructure, in the lack of resources that we need to invest in our community, to invest in better education, to invest in better access to healthcare. The list goes on and on. When you listen to some of the debates that happen in Congress and you see the results of those debates here at the local level about limited resources, about how we only have so much to go around, you have to recognize the direct connection between our taxpayer dollars being spent on these unnecessary wars and the lack of those dollars that we need to invest here in our communities. So for those who challenge you and say, well, the cost of war is just one of many issues that we need to consider in this election, I ask you to challenge them back to recognize that this issue of war and peace and the cost of war is central and directly connected to every single other issue that impacts our families, that impacts our children, impacts our community, and our ability to invest in a strong future. We owe it to our nation's sons and daughters. We owe it to those who have served. We owe it to our families, our country, and our future to make sure that we elect a commander-in-chief who will keep America safe and who will usher in a new era of peace and prosperity. Bernie Sanders is that candidate. He is that candidate. He is that leader with integrity, with character, and with the heart of aloha. And so now this is where we all come in. This is where Phil's call to action is so important. I believe ballots are being mailed out today. Is that right? Monday? You should start getting your ballots next week. Good. So with those ballots in your hands comes that power and responsibility that each of us have. I'll use my state of Hawaii as an example. I was the only elected official at the federal level to endorse Bernie Sanders. Everyone else went with the other candidate. Former governors, former elected members of Congress, they all endorsed the other candidate. The establishment of the party went with the other candidate. I was worried. I thought Hawaii might go the other way. On election day, people turned out at historic levels and won Hawaii for Bernie Sanders with over 70% of the vote. So don't listen to what people are telling you about what can and can't be done, because people prove time and again throughout our country's history what's possible when we stand together, what's possible when we realize the power that lies within our own hands and how powerful that action is. It's important that we recognize how critical it is that we let our voices be heard all across this country and around the world about what kind of leadership we want for our future. That we send this powerful message to those who think that they're in charge, to those on television who think they've got it all figured out, to those who are saying that this election is all sealed up, signed, and delivered, essentially telling people, don't bother. Just stay at home. Don't be a part of this democracy because your voice doesn't matter at this point. As an American and as a veteran, that's offensive to me. So I can sit in my room and be offended, or I can hit the road, I can pick up the phone, I can knock on doors, I can get on social media, I can do everything within my power to turn that feeling into action, to change that result, to prove them wrong. And that's what I'm excited about for here in California, because you not only have the opportunity to win California for Bernie, you have to win big. You have to. Because that action alone will send the most powerful message to those who seek to erode our democracy by taking away our most basic civic right and responsibility, that right to vote, to be the heart of our democracy. Let's reject that together. So take action, cast your vote for Bernie Sanders, make sure you go through your cell phone and your email list and your neighborhood block. Let's not let any stone go unturned and do our best to make sure that our voices are heard in this election. Thank you very much for your warm welcome here. Aloha. Thank you. Sure. The question was basically around the chairwoman of the DNC having a primary challenger, a guy named Tim Canova, who has never run for office before. Which, who, by the way, I spoke with someone yesterday about his race. He is raising historic amounts of money through online small donations from people like yourselves who are fueling his campaign. The question is, what does that bode for her and for the party, basically, right? The pro-Clinton bias. I think we're going to see. I don't know exactly how this is going to shake out, but the fact that he has gotten as much support as he has speaks volumes to what this has created. This is something new, where kind of the light's being turned on in politics. As Bernie says, he's doing something radical by telling the truth. And exactly how that's gonna impact races like Tim's, I think we'll see. But we're already seeing far more engagement, far more involvement, far more excitement around people like Tim, like Lucy Flores in Nevada and others, who are standing up and speaking that same truth.
One more question. Are you old enough to become vice president?
I was born 35 years ago. So yes. But I think that we should do away with the superdelegate system. It makes no sense to me. Way you can help effect that change is by getting involved in your local Democratic politics, by being elected as a delegate to your state convention, and from there to delegates to the national convention. This is something that I know will be debated heavily at the convention in July. There are so many people who are learning a lot more throughout this process about it and recognize what needs to be reformed and changed. So whether you are a delegate yourself, or you know who the delegates are and you can lobby influence them. That's how I would go about doing that. Basically, how do we continue the momentum? How do we continue the movement to make it so that this isn't just about what happens in July or November? And I know from Bernie's perspective, this has always been what he's had in mind, is something that's much bigger than just this election, whether he wins the nomination or not. And there are efforts underway to see what, whether it's an organization or what shape this takes. But in communities, I was in Portland. I was all over Oregon campaigning for Bernie a few days ago. And there, at every single stop that we made, people said, we are in this until the end, but we are in this for the long haul. So making sure that we don't let up no matter the outcome of the election. I don't know exactly what shape that's going to take, but I know. I think one of the incredible things about what has happened throughout this election is there have been a lot of people who have either been disconnected, frustrated, disenfranchised, or coming in to vote for the first time because they see someone who has not used labels to divide people, but has transcended above that to talk about real issues honestly and truthfully about how to put government back into the hands of the people. So when we talk about, you know, left wing or right wing, you know, progressive, conservative, independent, it's worth noting that in all of the elections that have happened so far, Bernie has attracted support from more than just the left wing of the Democratic Party. He's attracted support from all parts of the Democratic Party, from the vast majority of independents in states across the country, and even some Republicans. So this is about something that I think is very issue-focused and is something that has brought people together, which is what we need in our country, is the ability to bring people together and unite around the issues that impact us most.
I'd just like to ask what is being done about the voter suppression that is going on. Yeah. What is being done to fight back against?
There are a number of lawsuits that have been filed and others that are being filed. I don't know the specifics on each of them and each of the states where that has occurred, but they are being challenged, to my knowledge, is the short kind of immediate answer. The longer answer, though, is to what he just said. We've got to get organized in these different states and counties and communities so that where we see these laws and rules that are in place that are stopping people from voting, we've got to change them, and we've got to change this whole process.
What do you see as the role of journalism in the incredible grassroots movements that's happening right now in Hawaii, where young, truth-telling, energetic people are being voted into their representation?
You know, journalists have such a great responsibility. It's unfortunate that we have some who are working in that profession who are not reporting the full truth, put it that way. The change that's possible, I think, with technology and social media is that many people are becoming journalists, maybe even without realizing it. Reporting on things that are happening. Just as, you know, New York was voting, for example, I was watching Twitter and it was exploding with different examples of things that were happening in different locations where people were registered to vote. They went to a voting location and they were told that they weren't registered and they said, no, here's the email that proves that I am. They said, oh, well, here's a ballot. And they was handed a Republican ballot and said, no, I'm a Democrat. I want a Democrat ballot. Then he was told there are no more Democratic ballots. So I don't know how. So I mean, it's things like this. There are a lot of things that are happening organically that I think are important for people to be able to share the truth on things and to push back against those who are reporting things that are not true and that are complete myths and falsities.
Yes, can you please give suggestions for disaffected people who are being drawn towards Trump, thinking that somehow because he has not held political office that they don't understand that he actually is a prime example of the establishment, and really what a lot of people, I think, are being drawn towards him against their own self-interest. Do you have any suggestions on how to approach people from that perspective?
You know, a lot of the support that you see going for Trump is coming from people who are so completely frustrated with the status quo, and they're looking for someone who they think will lead them to a successful place. You hear some of that similar sentiment coming from Bernie supporters, except it's based in a place of having someone with a proven track record of servant leadership, of not fighting for himself or his own betterment, but someone who's literally spent his entire life in elected office and out of elected office working for the betterment and well-being of others. You know, it takes character and integrity and courage to do that. And the contrast couldn't be more clear between a Donald Trump and a Bernie Sanders. Poll. So the question is about how much, you know, what's the quick and dirty on what can be reduced from our military budget, and how can that then be used in our communities? I'm not going to pull arbitrary numbers out of the sky because I think that's irresponsible. You know, I believe it is important, and I think Bernie agrees with me that it's important that we have a strong military that can take action and keep us safe and be used when necessary. But I think there is a very easy, if you look at the money that's been spent, I believe we're up to $5 trillion now over the last decade and a half. If you look to that money alone, which is sometimes hard to keep track of because it's coming from, it's not really coming from the annual kind of maintenance defense budget. It comes in these overseas contingency operation funds. It comes from emergency funding that's thrown in even after the base budget has been passed. So broadly, you know, looking at the money that's been spent on these unnecessary wars, you can get a picture of how much good that money could do here at home. When you look at examples of incredible abuse and fraud that's been perpetuated throughout these wars, complete lack of accountability, you know, $400 million gas stations being built in Afghanistan for, like, I believe it was hydrogen fuel vehicles that don't exist there. I mean, really, it's makes you sick when you look at how some of our money has been spent. It makes you sick when you realize the Department of Defense has never been audited. Never been audited. This is something that we are working towards now in the Congress to get an audit of the Department of Defense.
One more time, Tulsi Gabbard.